go. Good morning. Good morning, Dr. Shaney. Welcome to the Happy Nipple Podcast.
Thank you, Lori.
I'm so happy to have you.
It's always nice to talk.
Yes, it is. It's always nice to share
this process.
So. I know we don't get a chance to talk that much. We just refer back and forth. So Dr. Shaney is here today, part of a larger picture. Matter of fact, I decided to take Tongue Time separated into two episodes. And the other journey that we're going to take besides talking with you today is with another IBCLC that I work with in Connecticut. And we're going to put our heads together and come up with good ways to describe and discuss oral tethered tissues, tongue tie, ankyloglossia. It has many names, right? So the reason I reached out to Dr. Shaney is he is one of the premier physicians, dentists in our area in Connecticut. Actually, you're in Ware, Massachusetts. So we send people from Connecticut up to see you because you're just so good at what you do. So I really just wanted to pick your brain today about who you see, what you see, the follow through, and how we work together. A lot of people wonder if their babies have tongue ties and they hear about it and they don't know about it. They don't know what that means. They look, they say, oh, I have a piece of tissue under my tongue. And that cascades into discussions about lots of different things. So I'm going to let you jump in and tell us a little bit about how, what your process is and who you are.
Well, I'm a general dentist, not to be confused with a pediatric dentist. I see individuals from newborns to 90 years old. I didn't want to get locked in just seeing kids, but I so enjoy seeing kids. I've been working with kids most of my life, camp counselors, swim instructor, that sort of thing. So I just carried on seeing kids in my practice. I used to do older teenagers releasing frenectomies under the tongue. The old way with scissors and scalpel sutures. Then I got into lasers and that kind of transformed everything. Then back in 2013, maybe, I started following Dr. Larry Kotlow at the Academy of Laser Dentistry. And so he had a pediatric track, which that's where I was introduced to ankyloglossia or tongue tie, lip tie, oral restrictions. They call it TOTS, tether oral tissue, or now restricted tether oral tissue. And so he was very instrumental in motivating me to do what I do now. So so I kind of followed his path in his lecture series. And so
he's like the granddaddy of TOTS. He's even got a book called TOTS, doesn't he? Dr. Kotlow. And people travel to Albany for him to do the procedure sometimes too. So I know that from Connecticut, we have people that get up there.
He's been doing it for so long. He has a wealth of knowledge about the process. And when I say process, just to release the skin is not the magic bullet that's going to make everything wonderful.
I can't wait to get into that.
It's a combination of connecting with you folks, IBCLCs, and that's where I get my referrals from. We have lots of parents who are looking online, and the key phrase is tongue tie, and does my kid have tongue tie? So they will naturally call because certain names come up on Google, and so they'll call, but it's a process. So
it is, for sure.
I will do a consult, but I won't do the procedure without them understanding what the process is. And that involves connecting with their lactation consultant and somebody who does what we call body work.
Right.
Somebody coined the phrase triangle of care. And so I'm one part of that triangle. You're one part of that triangle. And somebody who does body work, either pediatric chiropractor or craniosacral therapist, osteopath, occupational therapist,
physical therapist.
Ideally, when they have a knowledge of oral restrictions,
right?
Because it's not something that's always taught.
This is true. I didn't learn about this in lactation consultant school. Certainly, we weren't talking about it. So if parents, so you find, so do parents do reach out to you thinking, oh, my baby could have a tongue tie? Most of those parents are breastfeeding, do you think? Would you say that? Or do you think parents reach out just because they see a little piece of skin under there?
I think it's all ages. I think sometimes they'll have breastfed and failed because they didn't have the guidance early on.
Right.
And so their toddler's having difficulty with solid foods. And then they're looking at things. And so they're looking in the mouth and trying to see what's going on. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, the guidance may not be there in the pediatric office. Mm-hmm. A lot of pediatricians are really coming around and trying to understand what has been brought to light. But other ones are still in that protective mode, I think.
Mm-hmm.
That's protecting their patients and mothers from something that they don't understand fully.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so, we all want the same thing, right, for our patients. That just sometimes, if you don't have the knowledge of what it could be, especially, and if you don't, and in my world, if you don't value breastfeeding too much, then this doesn't really mean much. You know, I think parents pushing this knowledge and other providers kind of pushing this up to the top to the light, like you said, has been important.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't something I learned in dental school.
Right.
It's something that physicians learn in medical school. And so it's a transformation that has to occur within the field to understand.
Yeah, I've seen or heard of a few pediatricians that saw how happy their patients were when their baby started to breastfeed better and they had less pain, that's kind of what made them say, oh, maybe this has value.
Exactly.
Yeah. So I think we're all coming from a place of protectiveness and trying to make things better for our clients, especially with our little babies too. So tell us walk us through what it's like when you get a mom and baby in your office, because we're going to kind of focus on that because, you know, we're talking about breastfeeding. But certainly you can expound on any of your older children that you see if you find that important and interesting for our audience.
Well, first of all, we have them fill out certain intake forms, mm-hmm. questionnaires, finding out what their history is, what they're experiencing, what their child is experiencing, what behaviors they're exhibiting. Is there pain for mom? Damaged nipples? Is the child making noises like clicking and smacking noises? Is there a lot of leakage going on while they're nursing either bottle or breast? Just going through their weight gain, certain, you know, things that you would probably take them through. I just have them kind of explain it to me, give me their story.
Right. You got to hear the story, yeah. And how it's impacting, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Whether it was a vaginal birth or a C-section, can all have effect on the baby's body,
right,
which can have an effect on their breastfeeding experience. Mm-hmm. Any kind of trauma that's going to be experienced, birthing trauma, can throw things off as far as symmetry in the muscles, the relationship between their head and their neck. That can cause some underlying discomfort to the child, whether they favor one breast or the other, whether they're on a changing table or blanket and they're favoring one side or the other.
Oh, yeah.
Having an effect from their body standpoint, not necessarily from a tethered oral tissue point, but how the baby's going to be feeling in certain positions can affect their breastfeeding.
And you brought up something I just want to clarify. I keep saying breastfeeding, but we know that bottle-fed babies too struggle with tie, exactly. Just because a lot of times if they're struggling with breastfeeding because of tethered oral tissue, they're going to struggle on a bottle too. I see that. Exactly. I know you do. Yeah.
Exactly.
So let's kind of talk about that too.
Yeah. And a lot of things that can be deceiving is if mom's supply is really great, the fountain's on, all the baby has to do is swallow.
They live under the letdown. That's what I call it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so once things start to plateau out, then you start to notice some issues going on there.
Yeah.
And what I tell parents is a lot of times it can be genetic, as far as what the parents have going on. Everybody's got a little bit of something under their lip, under their tongue, and the cheeks. We don't really call it a tie unless it's interfering with function. But basically, it's just an embryological development that didn't shrink away.
Right.
So some adults have adapted and compensated over time. Being a general dentist, I get to see adults with oral restrictions. And then taking a medical history, and I've had to go back and look at things now that I know what I know. Migraine headaches, sleep apnea, acid reflux, chronic neck and shoulder pain, TMJ issues, all have been correlated to the oral restrictions and the tension and the strain that's put on the whole facial structure.
Wow, that's amazing.
So
treating a baby may trigger and cascade other health benefits later on, is what you're saying.
Exactly. You try to hit things off early on.
Right. And it's easier to get it done when they're younger. We know that too. Right.
Yeah. There's a certain age where it's easy, and then it gets harder, and then it's easier again, as far as management goes.
Got it. Okay.
It's all about management. The procedure itself takes less than a minute to do.
Yeah.
But it may take several hours to manage parents and manage before that. And then the body work, the instruction through the IBCLC.
Yeah. Oh, it does. It takes.
All needs to be done beforehand.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about why you encourage body work ahead of time, if it's possible. What do you think the difference is there?
If the child is relaxed and the muscles are working in symmetry,
right?
A lot of kids who are stressed are kind of shoulders to their ears, fists, and that's a telltale sign that something's not okay.
You can't get their finger. You can't even get your finger in their mouth. It's so tight.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's going, once the procedure is done, that's not the end of it. There's a process that goes on afterwards as far as wound care. The body work helps facilitate that wound care to be easier for the child, for the parents. A much more relaxed child, one that's more comfortable, you'll get what you need to do as far as the wound care, which we can get into later. It's much easier.
So I think what you're saying is, if we know that we've got to get in there and do some work in the baby's mouth, if they're very tight and very closed and very stressed, it's kind of hard to do that, to get in their mouth, to even to begin with. I hear from parents too, sometimes I think they think they go in and we go, and we cut that little piece of tissue and everything goes boink back to what they, and life moves on, you know? And I spend a lot of time kind of educating people about the growth, the embryological growth that occurs around those tissues, those tightening tissues under the lip and the tongue and the cheeks, perhaps. Can you speak to that a little bit about how, you said, you know, just doing the procedure takes seconds, but getting the effect of getting better takes weeks.
Right. And that starts before the procedure.
Right. If we can. Yes. That's important.
There's something called cranial nerves, which come out of the brain, and the whole relationship between their head and their cervical spine is an issue. Those cranial nerves need to be flowing nicely without any kind of impingement by a misalignment of cervical spine for cervical vertebrae, or as they're coming out of the skull, that all needs to be in a perfect alignment. So those nerves are firing. Some of those nerves go to the heart, some go to the respiration, some go to digestion. You know, you look into the colicky type babies, a lot of cranial sacral therapy will help that issue. it's not always given medicine and everything is fine, but it's about the whole relationship between the head and the neck and the shoulders and body, because we treat them as a whole, mm-hmm. not just as a little piece of skin under their tongue.
Right.
So I think that's important. That's where the body work comes in as well.
I think that's important to get across too, is just repairing that frenulum under the tongue is not going to fix magically everything. Although we do see some results sometimes with people right away, but
right.
how long do you hear from your clients that things are better or I see a difference? How long, what do you usually see?
After the procedure is done?
Yeah.
Good. I will talk to some parents and they'll say, we noticed a difference just doing the body work, but it's not perfect.
Right.
And the oral restrictions, not just about what it looks like, it's about function, and that's where you guys come in.
Right. So, function exam is everything. Right.
Once the procedure is done, I would say maybe 50 to 60% of the moms that come in have, after the procedure, I'll let them feed. The baby can feed right away.
In your office, right?
You will right in my office.
Breastfeed right you know, after.
We'll take to the next room. They'll breastfeed or bottle feed right afterwards. Maybe 75%, we'll see an immediate result. And it's amazing. I go in the room and mom's crying and I go, geez, what's going on? And she's so happy that it doesn't hurt anymore. And so, or that the baby's finally eating and she can't hear a lot of clicking and there's no leakage anymore. And so that happens quite often.
Or it doesn't
after the procedure.
Yeah.
But there are those other folks that need some suck training. There's going to be some muscle memory about how long from birth to the time of the procedure, they've adapted and compensated for what's right. going on there. So they get some muscle memory, which need to go back to the IBCLC for some suck training. And so that's when you start seeing some more transformation happening between the suck training mm-hmm. and the increased body work. Because once the tissue is released, whatever the body work's doing, be it pediatric chiropractic or cranial sacral therapy, that seems to be the most of the ones that I work with. Whatever they do tends to hold better.
Yeah.
Strain is not there on the tissue to pull things back to the way they were before.
So. Yeah. I think people are surprised to find out that it's not just coming to see you that makes things better. Although, you know, a lot of us kind of work with body workers, PT, OT, chiropractors ahead of time, because we know we see better outcomes with moms and babies that have had the body work before and then continue after. I use the analogy of, you know, you hurt your knee, you go to the doctor. The doctor says, go to PT. You go to physical therapy for a couple of weeks, the physical therapist and you kind of like, yeah, I'm not getting, we've reached a plateau where we're not getting better. Back to the surgeon, the procedure exactly. gets done. And what do they send you to? Go back to physical therapy to finish up. So that's where I'm looking at. And I see great results with this triad of care, you know, and over the years. And I'm just, it works. It really does.
Yeah.
So I think the parent who just hears about it in a mom group on Facebook and right. runs off to her nearest dentist, I think that's the opportunity for a lot of this education.
Right. And I mean, that's a great point that you made, because a lot of pushback gets happened, unfortunately, in the pediatric office.
Yeah.
With bodywork part. Because the usual and customary is go to the ENT, they'll snip it, and you're fine. But it's more, there's more to it than that.
But we know how that goes, don't we?
So it, like you said, it's a learning process. And so
it's a learning process for parents. And I think parents sometimes are really maybe dismayed. That's a word I could use, that we're not all on the same page about this. Mm-hmm. There are some pediatricians who refer to providers who might not really, who do the procedure, but not right, maybe know how to do it as well as others. I don't know how to say this. But we certainly have seen procedures from well-meaning providers that don't understand the breastfeeding part of this. And that could be difficult because parents sometimes think that it's all better and it's all fixed and it's not. And they're wondering why things aren't getting better. So can you speak to us a little bit about the procedure that you do with babies in your office?
Well, after we've gone through the initial consult, we'll do an oral exam. We'll, you know, take the information I get from the IBCLC and the body work, because I try to at least confirm that the parents are, I've had that connection before
the education.
They come.
Yep.
And so we'll go through, we'll take a look and see in their baby's mouth in a way that the parents can see as well.
Okay. So you show them what you're looking at.
Exactly. Exactly. Mm-hmm. We'll go through some things beforehand. We'll go through some before and after photographs of other kids. We'll talk about the different degrees, the classifications. I tend to use the Kotlow classifications where right to the tip of the tongue, we call it class four. Mm-hmm. Under the tongue, we call it class one. I tend to use the term submucosal as opposed to posterior because it just, for me, it's clarifies things a little bit better than posterior, which can mean anywhere behind the tongue.
I think that's a very good point that you just said. Submucosal means under the mucosa.
Right.
So it's not something that you see, like, I use the terminology, and I don't know where I picked up along the way from some other excellent educator along the way, but the sail on a ship, a mast on a ship. Do you see a sail or do you see the mast or do you see something in between?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And essentially an incomplete release would be cutting the sail, but leaving the mast.
Uh-huh.
So
like that.
And so the classifications right to the tip or, and the class one under the mucosa. So we'll look at everything and try to explain to them, because they all want to know what class is this,
mm-hmm.
what degree of severity is it? But it's about what their child is able to do with their tongue.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just about sticking it out. It's about elevating it,
mm-hmm.
the mid part of the tongue to the roof of the mouth. And so that class four, which is right to the tip, can be just as dysfunctional as the class one because it's keeping the middle of the tongue down.
Right.
Not allowing lateralization. So we'll go through that with them.
Mm-hmm.
Explain to them where we are seeing the oral restrictions, get them to understand, consent forms get signed. We give them the option of either, the way my office is set up, I don't have a specific room that would be soundproof. Every child is going to fuss.
Yes.
To think that there's not going to be any, that the child is just going to lay there quietly during the procedure is unrealistic. So we give them the option. You can stay here or you can go hang out in your car, which is two steps away from the door. When we bring them into the operatory where the laser is, we use a warm swaddle, special glasses for laser safety. Mm-hmm. We take before and after photographs. I use what's called rescue remedy for kids. I'm not a big pharmaceutical guy for kids this size.
Right. There's a whole lots of discussion about that. Yeah. Rescue remedy is safe and
And the feedback I get from parents is it works really well.
Okay.
The particular laser that I use has analgesic properties as well.
Oh.
It doesn't cut, it doesn't burn. Basically, it just kind of melts the skin away. And in that process, we'll seal the nerve and blood vessels at the same time. Virtually no bleeding, no need for sutures afterwards. Provides a little analgesia to the tissue while we're working, which means it kind of blocks that signal from the brain to the mouth.
Mm-hmm.
I've had my own done. I know what it feels like.
Really? That's interesting.
I've adjusted the settings on my machine to have the least amount of power to do what we need to do. And so my assistant and I secure the little one in her warmed up swaddle. The glasses are on. We take before photographs, and the procedure is done. Depending on what we've decided, what the consensus is where the restrictions are. And then take pictures afterwards, bring them back to mom for breakfast. We usually do this first thing in the morning. So, and then the goal is not to have them eat about an hour and a half beforehand, just so that, number one, that they're hungry when we're done, but the child's going to be laid back. We're going to have fingers in her mouth. We don't want a full belly. It's in the perfect storm for spit up an aspiration. So the procedure's done. Back to mom. And
right? 5 minutes, 10 minutes? It doesn't take long, basically.
10 to 15 minutes that they would be without him. The procedure itself takes less than a minute to do. But between getting them secure, taking the photographs, I do do a little craniosacral therapy on them afterwards to get those muscles more relaxed again. I was trained maybe 25 years ago in Upledger craniosacral therapy. So I used to use it with my adult patients with TMJ issues. And now it's been available. Now I can at least do a little bit with the little ones.
That's great.
Afterwards.
Right. So. And so how long, well, maybe I mean, I'm ahead of myself. So the big part of this isn't just the procedure, it's the follow-up. And it's the stretches. Can you talk about how the mouth heals a little bit to our audience and why that follow-up is important? Because, and I will put a little addendum in here because I know there are some providers who do this procedure who don't even talk to the parents about follow-up and stretching. So can you talk to us about why that's important?
Well, that starts before the procedure's done. That starts ideally a couple of weeks beforehand with some oral exercises at home. Getting mom and the parents used to having fingers in their child's mouth, going through the motions of what they're going to need to be doing. And a lot of the IBCLCs I work with and body workers that I work with understand what needs to be done afterwards and help the parents do that. And so so that happens beforehand. It also gets the infant used to having fingers in their mouth, not correlating it to the procedure, so that it's not such a strange thing when parents start to do it again after the procedure's done. Just by elevating the lip, elevating the tongue, sweeping under the tongue with their fingers beforehand.
So it's not so different when it has to happen later.
Exactly. Yeah. And, and there's more of a customization of the child getting used to that.
Familiarity too. Yeah.
Right, exactly.
Sure.
And so I'll do a little real time before we even go in to do the procedure on their infant, so that doing it afterwards doesn't always seem to work out well because they've eaten and they're usually falling asleep. And
you want to get back.
Fine. We don't want to disturb that. So I'll go through some real time once we've decided where we're going to go, because usually it's never just one spot. Usually it's never just the tongue or never just the lip. There's usually a combination of things going on there. So we'll go through in real time what it's going to look like on their child. Sometimes we'll even go through it with the parents. I'll demonstrate on the parents.
Yeah, that's great.
What it's going to feel like. And the home care starts the way I do it that evening. I just kind of prepare the parents beforehand that some kids, after the procedure, it's like nothing ever happened. They go about their day and everything's wonderful. Other kids can be on the other end of the scale to the point of being inconsolable for a period of time. And so it's usually short-lived. But when you're in the middle of it, it seems like forever.
Mm-hmm.
So there are certain things that they can do, some skin-to-skin nurturing, some warm baths together, nursing while they're walking around. Those are all soothing things.
How long do you encourage people to use Rescue Remedy for? Are they going home with it?
They're going home with it.
It's a spray. We should tell people it's a homeopathic spray.
It's drops that I give them.
Okay, the drops.
So I'll give them 4 drops before the procedure, and I'll give them the rest of the bottle to take home. We'll use that, ask them to use that consistently for the first 12 to 24 hours, 4 drops every 2 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And then play up a year, depending on how they're feeling.
Got it.
But they'll also use it about 15 minutes before they're going to do the home care.
Mm-hmm. And can you tell people who could be listening why we need to do exercises and stretches on these areas after? Because it sounds like, if you had knee surgery, you wouldn't be sticking your fingers on an incision. That would hurt. So can you tell us why that's important?
Well, the mouth is kind of unique. When your mouth is closed, everything's just kind of laying on itself.
No,
your
that's
tongue
true.
Is laying on the floor of your mouth. Your cheeks are laying against your gums. Your lips are laying against your gums. And so what we call healing by secondary intention, meaning we allow it to heal on its own without sutures. And so in the mouth, we need to make sure those wounds stay healing in that open position. After 12 to 24 hours, there's a little white patch that starts to form. We call it fibrin. And that's the natural scab in the mouth.
Mm-hmm.
You cut your arm, it's a brown scab. It's very dry. It's hard. In the mouth, it's a white scab, which is moist.
That's a really good clarification. Thank you. Yeah.
And so those wounds need to be allowed to heal in that open position to maintain the new range of motion that we just achieved by doing the release.
Mm-hmm.
And so those exercises, which we tried to get them doing beforehand, just to get everybody on the same page, getting used to doing that, allows those wounds to heal within that nice range of motion that we just achieved.
Mm-hmm.
Establishing a nice wound pattern within the first week makes things so much easier later on, because it does take about 4 weeks for things to heal completely. And so the home care, ideally over the years, we've figured out what works, what doesn't work. There was a time when rubbing the wound was an issue, was a thing to do. There was a time when putting coconut oil on your fingers was a thing to do. Now the goal is just to extend the wound so that you get it open to where it was when the release was done and allow it to heal in that position. So doing it on a regular basis every 4 hours is ideal. So we want to try to do it 5 to 6 times within a 24-hour period of time. So essentially that works out to every 4 hours.
Right.
And so,
and how long? About 4 weeks do you encourage people about?
Ideally, that's the good healing time.
Okay.
And so, but continuing with suck training with the IVCLC, continuing with the body work, facilitates that process to be much easier for the parents, because they're going to be, you know, come to a point where the kids are going to wise up and say, I'm going to close my mouth.
I don't like this anymore.
Yeah. Show, you know,
this is the most challenging part. Yeah. Absolutely. To follow up. You hear it. I hear it. We all hear it. Sure. We all see it when babies are crying. The therapy afterwards can be tough.
Yeah.
What do you find? Is there any tips and tricks do you have for people that that may be struggling through that time right now?
The first thing I tell parents is nothing they're going to do is going to damage anything, is going to rip anything, is going to make anything worse.
Okay, that's
so
good.
Not to be shy.
Okay, you're not going to hurt your baby, right?
Exactly.
Right.
They're going to protest. Their only form of communication is to cry.
Right. Good point.
They may fuss when it's diaper time. You still change the diaper. Once parents get the hang of it, once they've got through that learning curve, this should not be a long multi-minute process. Once they've got it down, they should be in and out of the child's mouth within 30 seconds. So it shouldn't be this long, torturous thing that's happening. Three repetitions that I recommend on each site, and you're out of there. And yeah. So I recommend three just because they may not get it completely extended with the first one. Mm-hmm. So three repetitions, and then with each one, and you're done.
Up and under? How do you teach them?
Well, for the lip, deep under the lip. There's a video on my webpage. I'm not sure if I'm going to, but
yeah. Well, we're going to attach that here.
Fingers deep under the lip, and then extending the lip straight out. Mm-hmm. So that they need to be able to see what's going on. And so we'll go over the video. We'll show them what ideal looks like. Mm-hmm. And I'll even send them pictures of what it looked like immediately after the process so that they can model that.
Oh, that's great.
And so under the tongue, we want to see what we describe as a diamond shape.
Mm-hmm.
So it's important for the parents to be able to visualize what they're doing. It's not just about what it feels like. It's about what it's going to look like. And so if they're not in a position to see, they need to get in that position. So what I do is I have parents sitting knee to knee facing each other.
Mm-hmm.
Whoever's going to be doing the home care will be having the child's head in their lap. They'll be looking at them upside down.
Mm-hmm.
The other parent will have their feet. The other parent's going to be the manager, keeping hands out of the face, yeah, keeping their head stable. The other parent's going to be doing the actual home care. So they need to be able to visualize what's going on in the mouth.
Mm-hmm.
With a headlamp, if they had a camping light, that would be ideal. So they can illuminate the inside of the mouth. And so they need to be able to see what they're doing to know whether they've extended things completely or not. Mm-hmm. So that there's no question. They need to be able to, under the tongue, they need to be able to see that diamond-shaped wound that is the result of the release of that restriction under the tongue. And as things heal, they'll see that diamond shape. And as time goes on, it just gets smaller and smaller and smaller until it's just a little white dot there.
Right.
And so that's going to be key. And so for some parents who are not comfortable seeing things like that. I mean, I've shown the video of immediately after doing the home care,
mm-hmm,
to, and we'll have some parents turn their head away or gasp or
like, oh, yeah.
Yeah. And so it can be, it's nice if they've seen it beforehand.
That's a good point. So you show them pictures of what it would look like before they're doing it on their own child.
Right.
Yeah, I get that. That makes sense.
So they can be,
if they're seeing us, if they're seeing lactation ahead of time, and we know that this is, you know, when we're moving in this direction, you know, we do spend time talking about this and kind of pre-gaming a little bit, you know, about this is what it's going to look like. And this is, how are you going to manage this at, you know, in the morning? What are you going to do when your partner's at work? How are you going to do these stretches? You know, can you maybe sing to the baby or make it kind of playful? Because headset matters for a parent too, I find, when they're doing this work in the baby's mouth. If they're doing it and crying the whole time, they've got their fingers in the baby's mouth, everybody cries, you know. So I teach them, you know, come up with a couple of songs. You don't have to love it, but at least you're gonna invoke some playfulness in some part of this, and make it a little bit better, and incorporating tummy time and doing it during there. And so there are ways, little things that you can tweak along the way to make this better.
Exactly.
Yeah. So what does your follow-up look like with your clients? Are you calling them? Are they coming back to you? There's no sutures here, so we're not talking about taking stitches out. Excuse us, dogs exactly. in the background. Keep talking.
Not a problem. So I will call him that evening after the procedure just to check in, see how the day was.
Yep.
Reiterate what we talked about in the office about home care. Back in the day before COVID, I'd have them back to the office in 48 hours so I could take a look at the wounds.
Right.
What we're doing now is having them take a video of them doing the home care. And that seems to work better because I can actually watch their technique. And then I can give them feedback on what things look like. If I can see the wounds, I can tell whether they're doing it well. Yeah. If I can't see the wounds, then they need to change the camera angle or whatever. But the video seems to be working out better than them just coming in the office, me taking a look in the mouth and seeing, well, because sometimes there's a bit of closure, and it usually happens under the tongue because it's the toughest one.
Yeah.
And I may have to, at early stages of the healing, the tissue's malleable. So we can reopen that, get it back up to the shape that it needs to be. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of times, more times than not, then the parents can do that with some encouragement, with some freeze frame of their video with arrows pointing here and there. Or,
they need some coaching. Coaching.
Exactly.
That's okay.
And so, and they also need some positive reinforcement. Well, what they're doing is good. They're doing a good job,
I always tell people too that there may be a day or two that you say, "What the heck did we? Why did we do this? Mm-hmm. Why did we do this?"
Yeah.
And then things usually get better.
Yeah.
Did you see most people are happy with doing this procedure? Most people that you have that do it.
99%. And there are ones that some isolated ones that have difficulty with the home care. They're not hands-on kind of people.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's difficult to do.
Yeah.
And so it leaves them frustrated and feeling almost like they failed their child. So unfortunately, and that's where the follow-up comes in, not just with me, but with you guys, the IBCLC, is the body work.
Yeah, we try.
I think finances are a big issue with a lot of people.
Oh, that could be a whole nother podcast, right?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
And so they're trying to maybe minimize expenses, which may end up costing them more later on.
In the long run. Absolutely. I agree with you. So if we have people who are listening who are in an area that they want to create relationships with people like you who do what you do, how do we find, preferred providers in our areas who do this great phrenotomy or tethered oral tissue work? And how do they create those relationships? How does somebody find somebody like you? I mean, we're going to put your website up here, so we know that people will find you. But how, say, if somebody's in Kentucky and doesn't know where to go for this procedure, how do you find a good provider?
A lot of it is word of mouth, I think.
Mm-hmm. I'd agree.
A lot of it is through the internet.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of it is through IBCLCs.
Mm-hmm.
Who have recognized that something's going on. I mean, mom's usually the first one that recognizes something that's going on. And they'll usually talk to friends or family members or go online.
Yeah.
Hopefully they'll go back to where the child was born, at least to mm-hmm. get some connection with the lactation services there. And that's where some of my referrals come from, but mostly it's from IBCLCs who
mm-hmm. who work with babies,
who work with them. And if if it's from the internet, if it's from word of mouth or friend to friend or self-diagnosis by my mom, that we try to direct them to the guidance of a learned IBCLC.
Yeah. So looking for lactation support in the community and kind of, unfortunately, there's no like stamp of approval is there a way when somebody lands on a website, is there a way to kind of say that, oh, this person does this all the time and is something that, you know, it, versus somebody who's just going to snip a little piece of frenulum and call it a day? Do you belong to an association or a group or some kind of a certifying body?
There are a couple of international bodies that are out there. There are Facebook groups where that deal specifically with lip and tongue tie issues.
True. Yep.
There's one. There's in New England, and then there's one in Connecticut that parents can get referrals from. There's the Academy of Laser Dentistry, which may have referrals. There's another one that, let's see, check my, the American Laser Study Club is another one that, they both do training for Academy of Laser Dentistry and the American Laser Study Club.
Got it. Yeah, I just think there's a lot of misinformation and a lot of providers who do much different work with frenotomies. And it's nice to be able to know that you're bringing your baby to somebody who does this all the time and understands the, it's the understanding the breastfeeding part and what the tongue needs to do for breastfeeding. It needs to elevate and extend. It doesn't just need to stick out like to lick an ice cream cone.
Right.
You know, and that function that goes along with that and the wound care afterwards. I mean, it does make a difference.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So I think to answer your question, I think the best referral would be from an IBCLC. And you know as well as I do that not all lactation consultants are created equal. Some have just LC or CLC after the name, but
a little bit of good training, but this whole, I mean, you know how in depth we can get with just the tongue tie stuff. And I mean, how much I had to learn, like I said, I didn't learn this in basic RN school either. Right. Nothing. God forbid I learned anything about breastfeeding in RN school. So finding people who understand and work on this in an everyday sort of way is important. And doing a little research ahead of time on your own and knowing some questions to ask, you know, of the provider. How many babies do you see? And is this something you do all the time or once every month or, you know, or once a year? You know, is it something that you're familiar with and do a deep dive? I think that's important to kind of make sure that the provider does that work. Because I've seen way too many parents go get procedures that aren't enough and aren't done. And it's so deflating to have a gentle conversation with them about, you know, this didn't work. And that's why we have a list of preferred providers. So we know that they understand what breastfed babies and bottle feeding babies need to do with their tongue to feed. And I think that that's the important part here.
Right.
Yeah, that is. Well, listen, thank you so much for joining me. I'm so glad you did.
This was fun.
It's fun. I told you.
Hopefully there can be some education made out there and some learning out there
that's the point.
You know, pose some questions for parents that they can ask their pediatrician. They can ask their lactation consultants about
having this. Having some information is never a bad thing. And even if it's a conversation that gets fired up with your pediatrician or, you know, why are my nipples bleeding? And why are, you know, hopefully they're coming to see me, but sometimes they don't. Sometimes they don't know off why this is a thing. And you have these conversations and the light bulb goes off like, oh, now I understand. And watching a family make that transition to their feeding goals is like, that's why we do this, right?
Yeah. Right.
Why we do it.
Just to as a final, there's certain criteria that are given to parents that everything's okay, that they can stick their tongue out, that they're gaining weight. And it's not okay that your nipples hurt.
It's not, not okay if you have pain.
Your baby's making noise, right, or spitting up all the time, or,
right, or coming on and off the breast and clicking and smacking. And we can fix it.
Exactly.
Well, thank you for joining me today.
You're welcome. Thanks for asking me to come on, Laurie. I appreciate it.
I am so glad you did. We're going to continue our conversation about tongue tie in the functional / clinical realm of lactation land. And I'm so glad that you were able to jump on and tell us about the phrenotomy part of it.
It's been my pleasure.
Thank you.
All righty. Take care.